This podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients. I love Active Skin Repair. So I've got the boy who is a lifeguard, loves being outside, but is pretty pale. And even though I'm on his case about the sunscreen, he gets sunburns. Active Skin Repair is super helpful when that happens. My husband is a total worker guy, tinker around in the shop, getting cuts and scrapes all the time. We literally use this Active Skin Repair, I mean, just all the time. It's always in use at our house. And it's not just for cuts and scrapes and burns. It also can be used for rashes and other types of skin damage. It's also safe and non-toxic, making it suitable for use on all skin types, all parts of the body, even on rosacea, eczema, and acne-prone skin. Seriously, all the things. I'm stoked about this sponsor. You can go to www.activeskinrepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and get 20% off your order when you use the code JOYFUL. So again, go to www.activeskinrepair.com and use the code JOYFUL for 20% off your order. Hey, welcome to the Joyful Courage Podcast, a place for inspiration and transformation as we try and keep it together while parenting our tweens and teens. This is real work, people. And when we can focus on our own growth and nurturing the connection with our kids, we can move through the turbulence in a way that allows for relationships to remain intact. My name is Casey O'Rourke. I am your fearless host. I'm a positive discipline trainer, space holder, coach, and the adolescent lead at Sproutable. I am also the mama to a 20-year-old daughter and 17-year-old son walking right beside you on this path of raising our kids with positive discipline and conscious parenting. This show is meant to be a resource to you, and I work really hard to keep it real, transparent, and authentic so that you feel seen and supported. Today is an interview, and I have no doubt that what you hear will be useful to you. Please don't forget, sharing truly is caring. If you love today's show, please pass the link around, snap a screenshot, post it on your socials, or text it to your friends. Together, we can make an even bigger impact on families all around the globe. I'm so glad that you're here. Enjoy the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. My guest today is Cindy Muchnick. Cindy is a graduate of Stanford University and has been working in education for over 25 years as a former assistant director of college admissions, high school teacher, educational consultant, and the author of five other education-related books. Her essays have appeared on Zibby Owens' Moms Don't Have Time to Write Medium platform, Your Teen Magazine, College Confidential, Raising Teens Today, The Los Angeles Times, and The Mom Experience, among others. She is also an experienced and always learning mom of three sons and a daughter, ages 24, teacher and graduate student, 21 in college, 18, high school senior, and 16, a sophomore in high school. Cindy speaks professionally to parents, students, teachers, and business groups on topics such as study skills, the adolescent journey, college admissions, and now the Parent Compass Movement. Hi, Cindy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for that exciting introduction.
It was very exciting. Oh my gosh, you've appeared in a lot of places and you have a lot of children.
I know. I'm the old woman in the shoe.
You're the old woman in the shoe. Well, are those ages all accurate today?
Those are all current. You have the most current. My third one turned 18 just a couple days ago. So I technically have like three adult children.
Oh, well, come on. We know that 18 does not mean adult.
Young adult.
Just because you can vote and buy porn does not mean you're an adult or join the military.
There you go. Terrifying.
Anyway. I am so glad that you're here. I mean, we literally were just talking for like almost 20 minutes before I even hit record because this has been a long time coming. It's so exciting to have you on.
I know. We have been trying to connect for such a long time. We've had a couple random postponements here and there, but we never gave up. We knew we had to have this conversation today, and we can't wait for your listeners to absorb yes. all of our parenting solutions.
Right. We know everything. No. Just well, kidding. Everybody knows that is not the truth. Okay. So the Parent Compass movement, start us off by talking about that.
Yes.
And what it is and how it came to be.
Absolutely. So I am the co-author of a new book called The Parent Compass, Navigating Your Teen's Wellness and Academic Journey in Today's Competitive World. And the idea for this book was born in March of 2019 when the college admission scandal rocked our headlines, also known as Operation Varsity Blues, where parents went bonkers, breaking the law, doing all sorts of naughty things in order to try to get their kids into what they thought was a magic elite list of colleges. And having worked in educational consulting, which means I worked with teenagers for the last 20 years, helping them through middle school and high school and ultimately culminating in the college admissions process, I and Jen, my co-author, were shocked and freaking out. And there was, you know, without repeating history and giving this story more airtime than it deserves, we started to talk about how in both of our practices and meeting with students, we saw students who were really suffering from the wear and tear of being adolescents. This is even pre-COVID. And oftentimes we saw that the behavior of their parents directly influenced or impacted the way that the students were behaving. Meaning there were students that couldn't speak for themselves or make their own appointments or advocate or answer a question without turning to their parent, or, you know, just were depressed and anxious and overwhelmed by the process of school. And then there were kids who seemed to have figured most of it out. And while we didn't do any direct scientific data research on our pool of students, we did notice that there were these parallels between the way we interacted with the parents or how they behaved towards us and what we were seeing in the students. So we sort of said, we need to help parents learn or relearn how to behave better. And honestly, the book began as an etiquette book to kind of teach parents how to navigate the middle and high school years in appropriate ways while focusing on the mental health of their teens and preserving the parenting relationship. What evolved was kind of more than that, and really a book that was meant to kind of guide parents through these years in often ways that felt counterintuitive and felt uncomfortable for them. Because in order to apply some of these ideas in the Parent Compass, you have to be really brave. And we can talk more about that, but that's sort of where it was born. The Parent Compass motto itself, or what the Parent Compass stands for, is really a way to check yourself. So your viewers can't really see this, or your listeners can't really see this, but you can because we're also on Zoom, which is I'm wearing a necklace that my co-author Jen gave me when the book came out. And it's of a compass. And I wear it as this tangible reminder to remind me to help stay on the right path and that I will make mistakes and I will, you know, blow it at times, but I will try my best to kind of follow the Parent Compass and what it is that we're trying to do here.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that tangible. Listen, I have a tattoo that literally says surrender that I got when my daughter was 15 because I was like, oh my God, I got to let some stuff
go.
Here you
go. Yeah. See what happens. That's right.
So I love reminders like that. So what is the Parent Compass path? In a nutshell.
In a nutshell.
You wrote a whole book about it, but in a nutshell.
The book, basically, what we did was we interviewed and surveyed heads of school, therapists, fellow authors who worked with teens and tweens, fellow college counselors, both in schools and private counselors as well. We also interviewed teachers who had their boots on the ground in the classrooms. And our main question was, what do they see parents doing well? And what do they see that parents could improve upon? And we use that a bit as like a skeleton to address these ideas that the Parent Compass movement basically walks you through an approach, one approach or multiple approaches, depending on which chapters you pick to try to follow or to try to put into place. And again, having different kids with different learning styles or different communication styles, some things will work and some things won't, depending even on your kid or on your willingness to try something new. And some parents, when they read the book, say, oh, I'm doing a bunch of those things. That's good. But there's a lot of things that you could also maybe haven't thought of. And so we're teaching parents how not to be helicopter, tiger, militaristic, hovering, micromanaging parents, And we're teaching them really kind of how to pull back and why that is so crucial and so important in the journey of their teens as they parent their teens. So we kind of guide parents through this whole process. The book is a relatively quick read. It is not meant to be preachy. It's meant to be accessible and light. And we use data to support, you know, what we're talking about from all the experts and research out there. But we also share stories of students who have sat in our offices and stories of mistakes we've made, Jen and I have made personally as parents along the way, and how we've learned to come out the other side of that too. And the mistakes we still make that we didn't write about in the book.
Yeah. Turns out we're humans, parent educators.
That's right.
They're just like you. Those are all the things that I really appreciate about this book. I love the stories that you include, the real life stories. And I really appreciate the symbol of the compass, right? Because, you know, anytime I'm going to speak or present, I use that visual as well. Like, where do I want to go? Right? Where do I want to go? And so I love that a compass is a guide, but it also allows for like a lot of just like
fluidity off the path.
Yes, fluidity off the path. Yeah. And it allows, like you said, we're the experts on our kids.
Right.
Right. And so anytime there's a resource that is offered as like, here's a buffet, you know, learn some things, check it out, try it on, see what fits, make it yours. And I really feel like this book does that.
Thank you.
And yeah, yeah, thank you. And like, so, you know, about 5 years ago, I completely niched down and stopped talking about like diapers and breastfeeding and only focused on adolescence because of my own experience with venturing into adolescence as a mom and really lacking resources that I loved. And what I have found and what I talk about with parents is that the teen years are a time to let go. Like you said, step back, shift roles. And that's what you highlight in your book. And so how do you describe beyond that? Like, how would you describe the role? Because even as we say that, like I just recently was, my son is a junior, but he's taking classes at the community college where it's like, you know, oh, college. So he should be dealing with all this stuff. But oh, wait, he's 17 years old and still a junior in high school. And I want to give him space to deal with the things, but then I want to show up too. So even as we say, like, step back, let go, like, it's elusive, right? It still feels a little wobbly.
That's such a good way of putting it. I love the idea, you know, and we've talked about this before. I mean, our book, instead of having a compass on the front, it has like a maze. So like you hit the walls of the maze and you bump into things and go the other way, sometimes in the maze, and the compass can guide you, but only until you hit a wall and then, you know, veer back. And it is such a metaphor for life in terms of, you know, we don't get anywhere from a straight line. And unfortunately, the way our kids and the way that the sort of college journey or college path seems to be calculated or mapped is like, you do this, and then 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 you get this. And that's where you're going from point A to B, C, D, E, college. And what are the steps we're taking to get there? But really, the path is so much curvier and nuanced. And, you know, we get off the path, and then we get on the path, and then we change the path, and, you know, whatever it is. And so in describing for parents kind of what this looks like, I do like to, and we talk about this in the book, I do like to refer back to Mike Riera, who has written a lot of good books for teens as well, and what he describes in late middle school as something where all the way up until middle school, you as a parent, and just like you shifted in your podcast, you are managing everything. You're driving them places, you're making their appointments, you're choosing their activities for the most part, you're helping them, you're feeding them, you're doing all these things because they're your kids and they're minors and they're not driving and they're little people. And then by middle school, they start to change as they grow and as their hormones change and as they start to kind of start to get a feeling of their independence. And what happens that Mike Riera describes is in middle school, at some point, when you've been the manager for all this time, your child fires you. You get fired. And if you're lucky and if you've built a good foundation, you get rehired back as the consultant. Some people call this like the driver, like you're not the driver anymore, you're the passenger or whatever it is. And I like the consultant versus manager, you know, idea and then kind of that, you know, you are there to be shoulder to shoulder at that point, and you need to be so that they can learn those skills that we want them to have, because no parent needs to be making their kids doctor's appointments for the rest of their lives and needs to be their alarm clock in the morning and needs to order food for them at the restaurant. I mean, come on, like, you know, let's cut the umbilical cord at some point. So it's hard. It's hard to do because we know more, we've lived longer, we have all this wisdom and advice we want to impart on them. But we have to let them explore and we have to let them make the mistakes and we have to let them learn to self-advocate and all the things that the Parent Compass is trying to teach. And in order to do that, it feels really counterintuitive. We have to pull back. So that's hard. Mm-hmm. And it does mm-hmm. take kind of bravery and discipline and even to say, oops, oh, that was too much. Hold on, let me try that again. And even saying that in front of your kid, like, I just blew it. Erase, rewind.
Yeah.
Here we go again. And I think that kids, when they see as parents that we are working on being a better parent, that we're not pretending that we know everything, even though sometimes we do have to do a little improvisation in certain scenarios yeah. to protect our kids. But in the times that aren't, you know, life or death, when we admit to them that we're just trying to do better, they perk up and go, oh, well, what can I do to help you do better? Like, you need me to help you do that? And the answer in our book is yes, because we created right at the beginning a questionnaire for parents to look backwards and to really go deep and investigate, how were you raised? How was education treated in your home? What were your parents' parenting styles? What do you want to keep from those? And what have you changed from those, depending on what you've learned in this generation? What's your spouse or partner's style? And how do they, you know, parent and, you know, view things? And are you on the same page in certain ways or different pages in other ways, et cetera? So you do this deep self-examination. And then you say to your teenager, hey, can I borrow you for 5 minutes? I'll make you brownies, or let's just turn off the phones for 5 minutes and let's sit on that couch because I want you to help me be a better parent. And honestly, they go, wait, am I being punked?
Like, yeah, this is a trap.
And they listen.
What do you want from me?
And then you say to them, I'm reading this book. It's a parenting book. Kind of embarrassing, but I'm trying to do better. And this is for you and for the whole family. I don't like how much I yell, or I don't like how much I boss, or I don't like how I'm being. So I'm looking for some new tools to add to my, you know, kit. And there's a student questionnaire. And that's the only time teens are invited into the book, really. Although they could read it, I guess, if they want to. And hopefully they'd be like, yeah, this lady is like helping us. Mom yeah. and dad, read this. You know, this is what I want you to do. So anyway, the kids then get a chance to kind of chime in on questions like, what do you wish your parents knew? Or what do you wish your parents were doing differently? Or what do you think is a great thing about your mom or dad or grandparent or whoever's raising you? Or what do you think you would like to see done differently? And there's this opportunity for a dialogue. So you get this conversation where your kid is giving you kind of feedback and you have this sort of feedback loop that then you process and go, okay, how can I put some of those things into practice and show them that I respect them as well? It doesn't mean you're giving up all control. It doesn't mean you're yeah. not, you know, in charge anymore, however you want to view it in your life. You're still the parent.
Yeah, it's deeply respectful.
It's respectful.
Like, it's so right? respectful to go to your kids and be like, what do you think? What's your experience of me?
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're aiming more of a, we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, Mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it?
We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders. Mm. So join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom.
Get out of there, life gunk.
Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January. Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking it.
I just have to tell you, Cindy, I love that I get to podcast like this with people and read books and connect with other parent educators, because especially when I'm having this experience right now where it's like, oh yeah, we're saying the same things. Like, I'm so excited for the listeners to hear somebody else saying the things that I say all the time, like have conversations, pull the curtain
right,
back.
Right.
Pull the curtain back. Be transparent. Connect with your kiddos.
It's so funny that you're saying that, because this is why, Casey, like, I knew we had to have a conversation. Like, we had to, because we are speaking the same language. We might be expressing it, you know, sort of differently.
Totally. Different metaphors. That's what I love about it, but it's the same message.
And what's
it's
even
so good.
Funnier is, which is kind of weird, and this is not to say everyone needs to go out and hire a private college counselor, but a big reason why people do is so that the parent says, I'm working on my relationship with my kids and I don't want to be writing them about the college process. Like, let somebody else do that. You know, let me take that off my plate so that we can do like fun stuff together. And I don't have to worry about the deadlines and I don't have to hover over them. And yeah. I'm not saying like, oh, go hire someone, because there's great people within school systems. There's peers that can help. There's older siblings that can help. And a lot of students do it on their own. It's not like you have to shell out, you know, a lot of money. But I hear over and over again with families I've worked with through the years, like, you're saying exactly what I said, but they listen to you because it's not coming from me. And same with any coach, right?
Do you still do college counseling?
I do a very small amount of help with writing, just the writing.
Oh, okay.
Jen, my co-author, has a wonderful full-scale college counseling business where she sees students face-to-face, but she also has a new virtual version that she's launched as well, where you can, you know, connect with her in a different space. But for me, yeah, I'm pretty much have been retired since about like 10 years, but I do, you know, still read the articles and I still do from time to time a little bit of writing consulting for kids, but not.
Okay. That was totally for personal reasons that I asked you that.
Okay.
So, you know, speaking of speaking the same language and pulling back, one of my favorite mantras that I love to share with parents is to be fiercely committed and lovingly detached. Which is easy to do when our kids are, you know, on paper doing well and following the path. And I was just talking about this with a client. Like, there is no real timeline except for the timeline that, like, the majority of people tend to fall into. But it's not real. It just happens to be this common, familiar.
It's familiar.
Right. So it's more challenging to sit inside of fiercely committed to you and your well-being and how much I love you. And I'm also lovingly detached to how this is all going to play out and the lessons and the mistakes. What do you notice when we're talking about the parents that sparked you to write this book? Well, and you said a little bit, like, the overdoing it parents.
Yeah. So Jen, my co-author, I'm going to kind of borrow this comment from her because I think she has said this very, very well. She tells the story, and I think we tell it in the book too, of a student that she worked with many years ago who really stuck with her in her mind as just kind of an all-around kid who really had it together, but not in a way that was like, just like it was like the just right kid, like sort of not overly crazy and zany and freaking out about grades, but like hardworking. And knew how to talk to adults, but also knew how to take feedback and just a really kind of all around well-balanced kid. And we do this a lot at the end of working with the students once they kind of graduate and, you know, or have picked their colleges is, you know, we hear how they're doing afterwards, or we check in on some of them, or some of them give us updates. Sometimes we never hear from them again until they friend us on LinkedIn like 10 years later. And you're like, didn't I work with you when you were 10 years, you know, like 10 years ago. So anyway, but what Jen did is she asked this student, because Jen's kids are younger, and she also, you know, feels like these are learning opportunities for her as a parent of like, how do I get a kid to turn out like this? Because these parents clearly did something right. And so that she asked the student, what do you think your parents did? Or, you know, what has happened in your life that sort of made you, shaped you into kind of who you are? And she said, my parents made me do hard things. Mm-hmm. They made me do hard things. And by watching her struggle and by helping her go through that journey, I mean, she knew her parents loved her. They weren't being like, you know, tough love. It's just, you know, the hard things can start when your kids are tying their shoes. Like we watch them stick out their tongue and struggle and tying their shoes is the hardest thing they've ever done. And all we want to do is just tie the darn shoes and get out of the house. But if we watch them and we encourage them and we are frustrated with them and we remind them about the bunny ears and all of that, and then they tie the shoe, oh my God. Like even if it comes untied a minute later, they tied the shoe. So starting then, if we let them do these hard things, they develop that resilience. They develop that, you know, sense that I can do it without mommy or daddy, you know, being there. And it's very hard to separate that from how much love we feel for them and how fierce it is. Because of course, we want to fix, we want to protect, we want to give our advice, we want to have wisdom. But I tell parents, and my big mantra is, you had your turn. We had our turn to be teenagers. It's not our turn anymore. It's not as hard as that is. And a lot of the choices our kids make are not the choices we would make now or have made back then, but it's not our turn anymore. So how do we connect with them and appreciate them when they're making these choices that are very different, or they're a very different kind of student than we were, or they're a very different kind of communicator than we are? Therein lies the magical question that why all these parenting books are written to try to get to some of those answers. And we think the Parent Compass does a pretty good job because a lot of counselors and therapists and coaches have said to us, like, I recommend your book to so many parents because I just say, read this. It's going to tell you a lot of things. And then let's work together and talk about some of these things. So,
I mean, your book is like, there's an assumption around academics and college in your book.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I'm thinking about my listeners. I'm thinking about myself, my own kids, and they're two super different kiddos. Like my younger one is totally, so far as a junior, really college bound, like typical situation.
Yep.
And then my older dropped out of high school, got her GED, went to trade school, and is just on a completely different path, which was not easy for me to talk about, like, how did your family hold education? Like, oh my God, I was like, what is happening?
Right.
But I've talked about it a lot on the podcast. I don't need to talk about it today. You know, I would say there is an assumption in your book around like college bound kids.
Right.
And so I'm curious, I'm trusting too that you also recognize that there's like loads of paths that kids can take.
Well,
right?
So I don't know if you finished the book all the way.
No, I know there's a chapter.
I'm not putting you on the spot, but the final chapter of the book is alternative routes.
Right.
And we do recognize, first of all, bravo as a parent for supporting your kid who chose a different path and trade school.
I was not perfect in that, but
first of all, she's probably going to make much more money than the college graduates. So if that's a concern of parents, I would say, hey, check out trade school or don't turn your nose up at that. The students that Jen and I have worked with are four-year college bound. However, not every sibling in their family is. And I even worked with kids who like their goal was to just go to community college and get a few classes underway. And that's ultimately what they decided to do. And then transferred out of that or just got their associate's degree and then went into the workforce, whatever. Everyone's path is different. So trade school, the military, gap years, tech school, internships, immersions, or the working world. There's a lot of other choices out there for kids. And what I've really noticed is a decade ago, if you heard that a kid was going to take a gap year, like the other parents receiving the information would kind of be like, ooh, oh, like, you know, I wonder what went wrong or I wonder what happened. Is that kid okay? Yeah. Whatever. When you hear people saying now, I would definitely say post-COVID, but even like leading up to COVID, these kids who discovered these gap year opportunities or brought them to their parents, or the parents were like, God, my kid is so stressed out and so burned out. Like they can't go right to college. We celebrate gap years now. Like it's almost like cruel and unusual punishments for some kids to go straight into college. And sometimes the gap years don't even lead to college after that. But the point is, I think that the flexibility and the awareness is there much more now for parents than it was. And I think the acceptance and the perception publicly is more open to alternate routes.
Well, I think that we all think like that for everybody else's kids. I think that when it's sitting down at our table, it is much more difficult to stay in that mindset. That was my experience. I thought I was the most laid back, like, kid-centered, right. You know, but then dropping out of high school showed up and I was like, wait, what? That wasn't a slam on your book.
No,
I love
don't worry.
That it's like that. And I love that there is that chapter on those alternative routes too. I did know that. I'd forgotten.
That's okay. Don't worry.
But I do have a question because, you know, I would love to know how to put the parent compass into practice for parents who have those kids who don't seem, in their perspective, right? Mm-hmm. From the parent's point of view, right. Kids aren't putting in the effort in school.
Right.
They're missing assignments. They're getting bad grades.
Right.
What do you advise as conversations to have?
Sure. That's hard, right? That's hard no matter what. That's hard when your kid seems a little bit different than the mainstream when it comes to getting through school. Or if you have a kid that's in, let's say, like for sake of comparison, the lowest 20% of the class instead of the, mm-hmm. you know, the rest of the 80%, right? Or a kid who really does struggle in school and maybe there's other things behind it, whether it's learning challenges or whether it's mental health stuff or who knows what the reasons are, or just boredom or burnout or all the things that have happened since COVID. Or just online learning, for example, is a perfect example of how many kids just shattered the school experience. And for others, it was like, oh my God, this is kind of almost a dream come true. Like I actually have to go back now and get dressed and shower and, you know, whatever. But so that being said, if you are a parent of a kid who really is struggling academically, to me, my first thing is like the communication is obviously key and sometimes really hard to have, but to have those open conversations of let's figure out what's going on and where things are coming from and what can I do to support you? So is it teacher driven? Is it you're in the wrong classes? Is it that there are some learning challenges that maybe we want to evaluate that and do a little bit of educational testing, not because there's anything wrong with you, but because maybe that will help us connect the dots better. And obviously to partner with your kid's school, whether it's through their counseling office or through their study skills center or a learning center, whatever it might be. So that's part of it, would be to kind of be solution focused in that way. And as a parent, I do think at whatever age this might happen, because kids all blossom and bloom and some of their issues come out at different stages in life. So you don't even know, like maybe it was no issue in middle school, but suddenly it's an issue in the jump to high school, or maybe just the jump to junior and senior year. You know, you don't know when these things might show up or what might be the triggers for them. But what I would say the other piece is even through that whole difficult space and difficult situation, there are things your kids like. There is at least one class or one teacher that they do like. I mean, there almost has to be by definition, because you can even, if it is the art teacher or the health teacher or the coach or whatever, there has to be an adult somewhere in that environment and a course somewhere in that environment that they like the best, even if they say they like none of them. And I always say it's really interesting as a parent to hook in and say, like, I think this is such an interesting conversation to have, but like, so like kind of rank your teachers from like who you connect with the most to maybe the least this year. And then let's go through the classes themselves. Like which ones are you the most excited about and which ones are a drag? And a lot of times kids love a subject, but a teacher that they don't click with in that particular year kind of ruins it for them.
Yeah.
Or my daughter, for example, who has never been a science kid, suddenly is like turned on by this one teacher. And the reason is because of the way he lights up the classroom and makes it exciting and interesting. And I could not believe coming out of her mouth were anything scientific. Now, she's not going to go on to be a scientist, I don't think.
Right.
But this teacher, she said, I'm going to take whatever he teaches next year. I don't care what it is. So kids can get excited. And if you can find out, just give me one. And let's focus on that as your positive. So that's the highlight of your day at school, whether it's that teacher or that class or that experience. It could even be an extracurricular. It gives a sense of hope, in my view, that like you're saying, this is a good thing. How can we maybe make more things like this? It might not be totally possible, but hooking into that and then knowing like, how can we add more to this? Like if English is your thing, junior and senior year, you can take a second English class and you can drop the math that's been plaguing you for forever. Or you can take, my daughter wants to take US history this summer. She found out she could take it in 5 weeks. And then she doesn't have to take it her whole junior year because she can have an extra free period.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important to her. She wants that extra free period to either hang out with a friend or go get extra help or take a nap at the library. I don't know, but she wants that. And so if that means she's figured out that she can go to summer school to kind of, great, not everyone wants to go to summer school. I certainly wouldn't want to do more academics in the summer, but she has a plan and that would work for what her goal is. So to me, it's like those kids that are struggling, like try to get to the root of it in a way by not making them feel like they're a failure in some way and let them know that you love them unconditionally. Like you are totally here for them to support them. And if you can come up with any stories, even made up, about your own struggles academically, it brings you right back to that same kind of level, that even playing field. You can say, oh, I hated when this happened in my math class. I totally know how you feel. Or, oh my God, I remember when I flunked this thing and I shouldn't have flunked it, but the substitute teacher was there and it ruined it. You know, whatever the story is, try to create a parallel for you guys. I don't know if that's helpful or not, but I mean, that's hard. That's hard stuff.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
Well, and it's interesting as I'm thinking about the conversation of kids who are struggling, I'm also thinking about the word struggle and how subjective it can be, right? And like I heard somebody, it might have been Dr. Becky, I don't know who it was that said this, but around, well, I just want them, and you'll hear parents say this all the time, including myself, I just want them to do their best, which like really means like perfection. Like if you're doing your best, all your assignments are in, all of your grades are good, you study the right way to get the, I mean, it's like, it's so funny and like struggling, you know, because I have some clients whose kids aren't, you know, just basically not living up to what they hope they'd be living up to, right? Like, and I'm there too. I literally sent a text to my kid yesterday and I was like, hey, just checked on your grades, you know, like curious about, you know, a couple missing assignments. And also I wrote, I'm like also really aware that I'm not the one in high school right now. You are. So just wanting you to think about like what you want colleges to see on your application. Yeah. And now I'm going to zip it, right? So I'm like 1 foot in it, 1 foot out of it. But
I think that's good. Like I actually, I like think that's a healthier approach than storming in and saying, what's going on with you?
Right. Like, you know, you can't do anything until all of these assignments are complete.
Yeah. I mean, I am so laissez-faire that I don't even like know how to log in. I wouldn't even know the password to looking at any of that stuff.
I'm pretty good. I don't look too often.
I don't know how I feel about all that monitoring.
Yeah. It's way too much information. Yeah. We get way too much information.
Like remember when we were kids, they got the paper report card that came in the mail.
Yeah.
That sometimes the kids would like get to the mailbox before it got there. yeah. by themselves a few more weeks where the parents are like, didn't everyone get their report cards by now? You know, and they're trying to sweat to figure out what they're going to tell you or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But anyway, with all that being said, yes, I think this is, you know, a complicated area. And this is an area that sometimes, I mean, it is okay to ask for help and it is okay to do some investigating. And I think the key is first you partner with your teen and then you partner with the school or with other support if that's needed. What I don't like, what I can't stand, and we wrote pages and pages in the book about it, is this whole over-tutoring thing that's going on.
Yeah.
Where tutoring has become this extracurricular activity. Like after school, kids are going to tutoring centers to have someone help them do with all their homework. Like what happened there? Like I have nothing against tutors, but a tutor to me is like kind of the last resort. Like you've got the teacher to go to, you've got the peer center to go to, you've got an older sibling or a friend has an older sibling that can help. You've got opportunities to go into help meetings, like at tutorials or whatever the school has created to provide that support before you just say, oh, we'll just get a tutor in every subject to help us through. It's like, what happens when the tutor's not there or the tutor goes away or the kid just feels like, and these tutors, no offense to them, because I've tutored in years past, but the tutors also feel a sense sometimes of, well, the kid has to do well in order for the parents to be happy with the tutor. So then the tutors are like doing work for what? Yeah. Like sometimes doing the stuff for the kids. And then it's like, then the kid gets to the test and they don't know how to do the stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder too, like just the idea that if they're not getting an A, like if a kid is like, you know what, I'm fine. C's and B's, well, I'm good with it. Like somehow that's a character flaw.
I know. We posted that like a B for one student is a celebration. And a B for another student feels like a failure, right?
Yeah.
But like where did B's and C's become taboo, right? Like,
right.
And why is it that, you know, A's are kind of all that's expected or hoped for or dreamed for? Like,
you're doing your best.
I wrote a book years ago, really, to try to educate the what I call 80% of students that are in schools, not the top 20% academically, who, in my opinion, just have it figured out. They're wired, they naturally self-motivated, whatever. So forget them. But I worked with
quit patting yourself on the back, parents. You just came out that way.
That's right. But I worked with so many kids who were kind of in the middle and the lower third, and their self-esteem was so low. They were sort of like, I'm just like a B and C student. Tell me what colleges like will take me. And I would say, well, like tell me a little bit about your study skills and tell me what you're doing, this and that. And I was one of the, you know, very motivated ones. And they would tell me things and I'd say, well, do you know that like where do you sit in your class? Wherever they assign us. I'm like, do you know you could sit up close and that makes a really big difference? Like you can get your seat moved or you can ask to be moved and just say you can't see very well. Or did you know that like building a relationship with your teachers is really important? Do you know how to do that or what that looks like? It's not just about this or that, but whatever. And did you know that like extra credit like exists in certain classes where you just ask for it and why it's so important that you do it to just give yourself that extra like insurance cushion when grade time comes around because it shows your effort and demonstrates this and that. So I go through this stuff and I was telling all these kids and they're like, oh, okay, okay. And then suddenly I'm like, why am I just telling this one kid whose parents are paying me a lot of money? Let me tell everyone. And so I wrote this book called The Everything Guide to Study Skills. It was this everything book. It's still out, came out in like 2016. And it's in those stacks, like the dummies guides, the everything guides, it's not. And it walks every kid through like, do you want to know what those 20% of kids are doing? It's all right here.
Yeah.
This is everything they're doing. You don't have to do it all. And some of it might not be your thing. And you may not see yourself as a student, but there are things you could do if you want to, just differently to kind of take the C to a B minus or take the B minus to a B plus. You know, like there are things, but you can't make your kids do it, right? I mean, it's just kind of up to them. How important is that to them? And if they're like, like I'm good with my B's and C's, let's come up with that college list. There are 4,000 colleges in the country, Casey. 4,000.
Yeah. Everybody can go to college.
Everybody gets to go. Most of them, the majority, and I wish I had the more exact number. I want to say 80% of them accept more than 75% of the applicants. I mean, not that hard to go to college. It's just, we've made it into this competition and this frenzy for only a special list of schools that we think is the magic answer. And, you know, that's what parents can do is ignore U.S. News and World Report. You know, use those rankings if they want. It's just a way to familiarize yourself with schools. And maybe, sure, pick a couple fantasy schools if you want. But like, don't focus on that. Focus on fit. Focus on, you know, schools that people haven't maybe heard of. And don't feel like you have to make excuses for your kids of why they go to a school that maybe nobody's heard of. Like, and that's the worst when the parent's like, my kid goes to blank school. And the receiving parent is like, oh, like, where is that? Oh, it's in blah, 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 blah. And here's why they chose it. Because, and they feel like they need to make an excuse about it. Instead of just like proudly wearing the sweatshirt of wherever your kid goes, just wear it, you know, like.
Well, and I really appreciate, I think that's what you're saying is so important, because I think that there is, in the community that I hold of parents, there is this idea that there is this overwhelming sense of urgency and this idea that if their kids are struggling, which, by the way, the struggle is where life skill is developed, right?
Bravo, yes.
The struggle is the gift. And so whatever struggle we're talking about, like making it through, whether it's mental health, whether it's substance use, whether it's schools, like whatever the storyline of struggle for your kid is, is growing and developing them and giving them an opportunity to grow and develop in a really valuable way. If we stay out of the way,
that's right.
Which isn't like abandoning, but if we cannot make it about, I will make you do something different, right? Because then
forget it. Then you've lost it.
Yeah, forget it. And so, I just really appreciate what you said. And like, here are like, this is it, right? This is the consultant. Here are some things you can do if you want to bring that up. If that's important to you, because if it's not important to you, you know, then
okay.
It's not important
it's not
to
a value.
You.
It's not your value. I mean,
and if it's important to me as the parent, I get to do some like inner work around that because I already had my chance.
Yeah, we have a good chapter that Jen took the lead on goal setting and on, you know, for your kids to set their own goals. And it's actually interesting as a parent to see the goals they set and then to create, it really walks you through how to set goals and then how to create like measurable objectives to meet those goals, right?
Yeah.
So if your goal is, I want to become a better reader, then the measurable objectives are, I'm going to try to read one book a week. I'm going to try to listen to a literary podcast once a month. And I'm going to try to get involved in my local library. So those would be like three measurable objectives. And then as time goes on, is that helping you become a better reader? No, because I'm not really listening to the podcast, but yes, I'm involved in the library or whatever. And then you can rewrite those measurable objectives. And when kids really see their goals like written down and that they're a concrete, you know, just the act of writing it is half of it, sort of a concrete goal that you can set, then those objectives become like simple steps that you can take to try to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that you said, which I thought was kind of interesting about the kind of idea of pulling back, which I think is, does feel counterintuitive and it feels hard. And that's why we say following a parent compass, you know, requires bravery and it requires a village. It requires finding a few like-minded parents who are on the journey with you, that you're not competing with, that do know and care about your kids too, and that feel in a similar way. Because most of the parents out there are either like hiding half of their fear or they're, you know, preaching all this stuff that doesn't make sense to you. And you just have to kind of smile and nod and say, I'm not going to take that advice, right? So finding that sense of community can be very comforting, and finding like-minded parents or like-minded podcasts to listen to, or, you know, whatever it is that gives you as a parent some comfort that, okay, I'm not alone in doing this. And I feel really lucky because just yesterday, someone put a book review on Amazon, which these book reviews crazily mean so much to authors. And it was a verified purchase. So it's somebody who like bought the book.
Real person.
Bought the book, heard about it. A real person. It's not a friend that's changed their name or whatever it is. And they wrote that they felt so comforted in knowing that it's okay to not, you know, push your kid. It gave them permission to kind of step back and say, I think what I'm doing is actually okay. And I don't have to push them for X, Y, and Z in order to achieve A, B, and C. Because that's me projecting myself onto them. Instead, I can just enjoy this journey we have together and laugh at some of the mistakes we make and some of the failures that they make. And Lisa Damore, who, you know, has written Under Pressure and Untangled and who we all, you know, adore as a guru, she talks about one thing you mentioned earlier, which was, you know, we're not here to eliminate anxiety. Right? Like the science tells us that some anxiety is good. It gives us the adrenaline. It gives us the, you know, the courage that even if we sweat and even if we breathe deeply and breathe, you know, short breaths or whatever, to conquer like the fight or flight fears or to approach the exam or the things that kind of make us panic. The anxiety isn't something like, oh, let's just get rid of all of it. And so we're, again, if we're eliminating all the discomfort, then we're also not giving them some discomfort, which is good for us. It actually is good to have that discomfort because that makes you have the courage to speak in front of the class, or it makes you have the courage to go up and talk to your teacher and disagree or ask a question if you're shy or whatever it is. So I think that's kind of another thing to keep aware of. I don't know, Casey, let's just solve all the problems of the world today.
I know. Well, Cindy, I know. Now I know what happens when the two of us get on Zoom.
I know. We might have to do this again. We have to have a part two.
Oh my gosh. I know for sure, because I have so many other places that I want to take you. And
I want to go with you.
And time is running out.
That's fine.
So, okay. So we've covered a lot.
Yes.
And there's more. One day to cover more of. And listeners, The Parent Compass, Navigating Your Teen's Wellness and Academic Journey in Today's Competitive World by Cindy Muchnick and Jen Curtis is available in all the places.
Yep.
And before we get to where they can find you and follow you out in the world, I want to ask my last question, which I always ask guests, which is, in the context of The Parent Compass, what does joyful courage mean to you?
Okay, so I kind of knew you were going to ask me this question, so I had to think about it because I didn't think I could do it on the spot. So,
oh, good job. You prepared. Love it.
I did prepare because I thought this was such a unique question, and I like to ask sometimes at the end of those podcasts, you know, like the Charlie Rose asks like those quick takes on things, you know? So my answer to that in light of The Parent Compass is I think that joyful courage means, you know, to keep it light and joyful in perspective. Okay. Like, this is life. We need to laugh. We need to hug and love and touch and feel all the feelings, the joyful ones and the, you know, the painful ones. Mm-hmm. But the courage part was so perfect because it's having the strength to be brave. And that is what we're asking parents to do in The Parent Compass. We are asking you to be brave for the sake of preserving that relationship and for equipping our kids to be ready. And, you know, they still will call, they still will ask advice. I still get from my 24-year-old laundry questions and food questions, but, you know, to be brave enough to have the courage to kind of follow this path and try this path and knowing we're just doing our best, right? I mean, when you say doing your best before, that to me translates as like, do your best and achieve the most. I'm referring to doing our best as like all we can do is kind of the most we're capable of doing or capable of giving. And
in that moment,
at the moment, right? And we know that for ourselves. And it's okay to apologize too, because we're going to make a lot of mistakes along the way. So anyway, I love the title of your podcast. And I'm so glad we made the time to have this really neat conversation.
Yay. Me too. Where can people find you and
follow
you?
We're so easy to find. We're parentcompassbook.com on the internet, www. And we are at Parent Compass on Instagram, and we are The Parent Compass on Facebook, and we're even our names, Cindy Muchnick and Jen Curtis, on LinkedIn, if you're a LinkedIn kind of person. And we love connecting with readers, so reach out to us. If you have a book club, we'll pop in on Zoom. We love doing that. Yay. And if you have any schools that you want us to come speak at, or, you know, want your business to have a little Parent Compass induction ceremony, whatever, I love to get out there and spread the Parent Compass gospel.
Love it. Oh my gosh. This was so fun. Thanks so much, Cindy.
Thank you so much, Casey.
Thank you so much for listening in today. Thank you to my Sproutable partners, as well as Chris Mann and the team at Podshaper for all the support with getting this show out there and making it sound good. Check out our offers for parents with kids of all ages and sign up for our newsletter to stay connected at besproutable.com. Tune back in later this week for our Thursday show, and I'll be back with another interview next Monday. Peace.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model. So that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun. So check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.